Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio, Internet Talk Radio, recorded from the west coast of Sweden. My name is Henrik Palmgren. I am the editor and webmaster of redicecreations.com. And you can tune in to our show every Thursday and Sunday for our regular program. And we also have a subscriber section that you definitely don't want to miss out on if you want to have full access to our growing archive of radio shows. Today our guest on the program is Michael Sunanda, and we are going to spend some time talking about wild weather cycles, global warming, ecological crisis, Gaia Rage, and much, much more. The topic of global warming definitely is a hot topic, as it were, and this is something we try to follow on our website and this radio show. It's important to hear many different perspectives in order to try to figure out what's really going on with our changing weather patterns and what some of the reasons for all of this might be. So among other things, this is what we will dive into today. And Michael Sunanda's website that you should check out is efn.org. Then it's / and squiggly mark ecozma, that ecozma. Again, that's efn.org, then it's / and the squiggly mark, and then it's ecozma. And I'll also have this link up, of course, on our information page for this program, so you'll be able to get there easily from there. So let's bring on our guest and get this show on the road, as it were. Welcome to the program, Michael Sunanda. Thank you so much for coming on with us.
Oh, aloha. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you with us. You know, before we begin talking about your work and research and so forth, it might be a good idea to talk a little bit about you. I'm not that familiar with you. I know that you've been on Coast to Coast, and I think Feet to Fire also. I know that you're doing talks and you produce e-zines, among many other things. But beyond that, I don't know that much about you. So if you will, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and when you first began working with ecological and weather-related topics.
Thank you. Yeah. In the early 70s, I began doing a lot of meditation and yoga and study with Buckminster Fuller. And you might recall he's the geodesic dome genius.
Yeah, definitely, yep.
Was one of the pioneers of ecology in the United States, or actually the world.
Mm.
But he was a technocrat, and he believed in technological solutions, and I was into learning more about how ecology works and what he calls world design science, revolution, and human trends and needs. So it was more of a way of studying than a solution. His geodesic domes are still being used around the world in many ways, but they're a technological solution. And, of course, most of the people in the world, in the Western world, they want a technological solution. And I'm my solutions that I'm doing and learning are more ecological, organic growing, gardening, natural health, community cooperation, local projects, neighborhood power, food, not lawns, many different ways to become healthy and not become dependent on so many imported goods is what we're, that's where a lot of the waste comes from that causes the greenhouse gases that heats up the atmosphere.
Mm.
As far as locally, I'm a permaculturist, and permaculture, I'd be curious if there's any of that in Sweden or Scandinavia. There's quite a bit of it in England and in Germany, Austria and Germany, and I'm not sure about France. They do have a lot of organic growing. Organic gardening and growing and homesteads is permaculture. It's ancient. It's almost in every country in the world, but it's small.
Mm.
And like organic gardening or organic growing is growing fast in Europe and the United States, but you don't really know about it unless you do it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a big thing. It started in Australia, and we'll get into that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, so okay, so you've been in this business, or you know, as it were, for a long time. When did you, you know, first begin to? Because am I correct in saying that you're around, as it were, traveling around and doing talks and so forth? And if that is the case, when did that begin?
Well, I started doing permaculture in the 1990s, and I started studying weather intensely then while I was doing that and living on a organic farm in Hawaii. And I did that for a few years there, and then I moved back to Oregon in the northwestern United States. In the late 70s, we started doing a thing called Ecotopia, which was a actually was based on a fictional book about the Northwest seceding from America and becoming totally ecological. But Ecotopia, for me, the first project was a gleaning project, and gleaning means that we go out to the farms and we harvest all the leftover food. Well, this is being done around the world in 100 countries where people go out and glean what is left over from the farms. Or the farmers do it themselves. They take, you know, one crop and then they'll go and do the second harvesting, and then they'll do the third harvesting if there's anything left. And of course, then we harvest mulch and we manure the fields, and it's very organic, and most farmers now who use chemicals don't know about it. So it's a real, you know, get your hands dirty. It's very organic and very healthy and really fun to do. So I've been doing that occasionally since the 1970s, and I write a lot about these issues. And I teach here. We're organizing a permaculture gathering, which will be connecting hundreds of people who are doing permaculture and the cities, connecting the cities with the farms. And it's very big, and we could talk for hours just about how permaculture works here.
Is it, you mentioned Ecotopia, is because I saw in one of your e-scenes something referred to as Econesia. Is that the same thing but a different word? Or?
Well, Econesia is more of a organic, it's a word for remembering, for forgetting or remembering the ecology cycles. Like, there's all these cycles of ecology, we call them weather here, but I call them weather and fertility. Econesia means the awareness of nature and how the cycles work around you in your climate, and how they work with your body. And that's called acclimatizing. Whenever your body is responding to the weather around you, or even indoors, but there's you're kind of cut off from climate there, that's econesia. And econesia is remembering or forgetting the climate cycles and the natural life, you know, microbes and soil fertility and all the effects of nature.
So let's you know, dive into it and talk a little bit about these cycles. I know that, you know, one thing that we do want to get into here today, of course, is, you know, the wild weather cycles, and or I guess we could refer to it as Gaia cycles also. And I also know that you talk about something that you call Gaia Rage. Tell us about that.
Well, Gaia Rage is a word that just came up for the runaway greenhouse gases and the energetics. Energetics is the study of all the energy cycles in a given system. So the Gaia Rage is just Gaia being the goddess of the Earth, Mother Earth. She's very hot and mad right now. And the rage means the heat, the fury, the storms, the floods, the earthquakes, volcanoes. Because Gaia isn't just the weather, it's also the soil, the fertility, the geology, and that. And rage, you know, implies that she's mad and that she's rebalancing in a very, you know, extreme ways, fires, floods, and superstorms, all these things, you know. And the white folks are pretty much indoors most of the time, so unless you're a devoted gardener or you work outdoors, you don't really notice. Of course, then if you study the internet and know about the weather cycles, how bad they are in different places. You know, if you listen to the news, we're getting reports from Florida. Half of Florida was having fires recently. And the southwest United States, the southeast are tremendous fires and droughts right now. So the cycles are extreme, and that's what Gaia Rage is, the extreme cycles, 100-year maximum, we call it in permaculture.
And I guess that you have been also, I guess, paying attention to the weather for a long time then. And what I want to ask you is, do you think that there is an increase like all the time now as the years go by, or is this something that picked up, you know, what, about, you know, 10 years ago, or even, you know, we had some of the most severe hurricane seasons over in the States, of course. I think it was 2005 with Katrina, if I'm not mistaken, and so forth. But what's your take on that? Is it increasing?
Well, the weather is getting worse, and the main driver of that is the sun. And the sun is heating up, but it's more than just hot. There's all kinds of plasma. Plasma is a name for energy from the sun, and it's all of the energy. It's just invisible energy, the radiation, the magnetic fields, what we call the solar wind. It's all increasing. Now, it increases in cycles according to the sunspots.
Yeah.
And around 10 years ago, there was the maximum. It's 11 a year up and 11 year down. It's a 22-year cycle of the maximum and the minimum of the solar cycles. But the weirdness is that it was a maximum in 97 or 98, and we had tremendous heating and storms at that time. And it also energizes the inside of the Earth and all the other systems, volcanoes and everything. So we expected it to go down. Well, it didn't go down. It actually kept peaking. But it's been gyrating. In other words, it's been going up and down, up and down. One month up, a couple months down, a couple months up. So it's been going really crazy up and down and very high. So we didn't really have a solar minimum. And the NASA and those climate scientists, they keep saying, oh, yes, we're in the solar minimum right now.
Yeah.
Well, that was last month. Now, this month, it's going crazy.
Yeah.
So it really is unpredictable and not going down like they said it was going to. And that's heating up everything because, you know, heat is accumulative.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just whatever the temperature is today. It's accumulative. That's why the season cycles work, is that the heat, the water, the ground, the air absorbs the heat, and it's still... That's why the glaciers melt, because the heat is accumulative.
So, yeah, as you say, I definitely have been following this with the sun also as a big kind of, connector with all of this, talk of global warming that we have now. And this is, of course, beginning to get into the mainstream more and more by the day, it seems. And as you say, I think it was an M-class flare have been popping up just, here and there just in the past few weeks. And there's definitely, activity on the sun. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's going to peak again around 2011, 2012. Do you know anything about that?
Well, that's what they say, but I don't really believe this like climate scientists anymore, because they have some big problems with their climate models. And also, a lot of those policies are run by the military, even if they aren't... in other words, the scientists are not agreeing with each other. And a lot of them, they don't even agree with what is going on. The information about the sun is controlled mostly by NASA and their satellites and telescopes and their news media. The NASA is a PR campaign for the space agency, which is controlled by the military satellites. So they're not really for the people, they're for the military.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
This issue about science and the military and the control and their predictions, half their predictions are wrong, just not even debatable, completely wrong. So they're not really reliable anymore. And were they ever reliable. it's the Bush people, they're struggling, they're arguing within themselves.
Sure.
They fire people, they censor their news information. It's not reliable. I do trust weather science or climate science, but only when I can get consistent, reliable information from them, from the reports. And most of that's coming through radical reports and, what we call the Al Gore Company. But Al is still a politician. I'm an ecologist. So... my solutions are very different than his.
Yeah, boy. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Big Al, as it were. Do you think he's is he doing a good job or a bad job? There's a lot of opinions out there, but at least he's bringing this topic to the attention of a lot of people. What's your take on his, you know, on his work in on global warming?
Well, he's quoting a lot of science, climate science, and it does go back, you know, 50 years, and he did begin this work of exposing science, real climate science, in the 70s and 80s, and he published the biggest book in that subject in 1992 called Earth in the Balance.
Mm, yeah.
Wonderful. So he does have integrity, but he also is a politician. So he is working with the corporations that he and the agencies that he feels are going into honesty and working for people's solutions. But his solutions are not very organic. They're not very home-based. He's going on the big scale. And permaculture and community cooperation is local. It's called powering down or home scale.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it. You can just meet your neighbors and start bicycling and growing food and trading locally. There's lots of farmers markets. Europe probably has more farmers markets than America.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting that you say that. The solutions part, in one way, doesn't seem to be the strong case when speaking about Al Gore. I'm just thinking about, you know, very simple technologies like France has been developing a car that actually runs on air, compressed air. Have you ever heard about that?
No, but I've also heard of cars that run on a machine that will burn water. But
yeah.
See, I don't really know. And these solutions require a big factory, and permaculture doesn't require a factory, it requires soil and weather.
Mm-hmm.
And we have permaculture systems for arid permaculture, tropical, semi-tropical, and temperate. So all the ecozones are, the fertility is what we need. We don't need a car. A car is just going to take more imported goodies, more factories, and more military to keep the economic system supporting all those factories.
Mm-hmm. So, if we were to talk about, you know, the reasons behind, you know, global warming, I think a lot of people say it's, you know, as you mentioned, it's only the sun, for instance. Some people say it's only the you know, it's man-made basically, and humans are to blame for it. We also have the aspect that you briefly mentioned, you know, the military establishment. There are documentation on weather manipulation. We have you know, everything from HAARP technologies to documents like Owning the Weather in 2025, an official military document released about the, you know, what can be done basically with technology connecting it into weather manipulation. What do you think? Is there a main reason for global warming, or are all of these factors contributing? What's your take on it?
Well, it is all of the factors, and the sun is a major one. It's the biggest player.
Mm.
But let's just say the sun is half of it, and man-made technology is the other half.
Mm.
The greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide, and exotic chemicals. But then there's another huge factor, and it's the deforestation.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And
yeah,
that actually was, if you take that as a farming problem,
mm-hmm,
in other words, if you get a lot of heat, and the heat is drying out and causing drought,
mm-hmm,
and the drought kills the farms, and then whenever you lose vegetation, whether it's grass, forest, or a tundra, whatever,
mm-hmm,
you know, any of those, when they die, it releases CO2 and methane.
Mm-hmm.
Those are greenhouse gases. So the deforesting, the Amazon, the Western forests, Siberia, wherever the forests are being killed, that is releasing greenhouse gases.
Yeah.
Well, that's very fast now. That's as big as all of the burning of fuels, gasoline and oil and wood. When you burn wood, you get greenhouse gases.
Yeah.
So all
yeah,
these things are contributing together. What you said, what's the reason for it? I don't believe in reason anymore. I'm into causes, multiple causes, and they're hundreds or thousands, but we say they're just dozens of causes. And I have a thing called the Dirty Dozen, which is what I've mentioned about three or four of them right now.
Mm.
Also, heating up. Anytime you heat up your rooms, your houses, factories, cities, cars, motors, all of that heat adds to it. Air conditioning does that.
Yeah.
Every time, and air conditioning is a cooler, but if you notice the air conditioner, the machine itself is very hot. So all these things contribute together, and they vary from bioregion to bioregion.
Mm.
The cumulative effect is heating. But the other effect is the loss of the CO2, the lungs, which is the forests are the lungs of the earth.
Yeah.
And the oceans work that way too. So the ocean's heating, and we're not heating the oceans directly like we're heating the atmosphere. We're heating the oceans indirectly by creating CO2 and dumping pollution into the waters and the plastics and all the ways of the water melting, and then the sun that heats the water further, and it's all cycles. There's a huge interlooping codependent cycles that are so complex that most people just don't even think about it, let alone understand it.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing, you know, that immediately comes to mind is of course, you know, the Western world, you know, in a way is a consuming society, as it were. You know, it's all about the products and the gadgets and this and that, you know. And what do you think would actually make people to, you know, turn away from that? Or do we have to turn away from that? I mean, a lot of people, as it were, are hooked on their technology and their, you know, their cars and all of that. You know, how can we turn away from that, or do we need to?
Oh, huge question. Just gigantic. I could talk for a couple of hours on that. The solutions are, okay, we have the causes, and we're going over those. We've covered most of the causes, and the solutions. So we have two basic direction solutions, the technocratic solutions, technological fix, the better cars, the solar power, wind power, hydropower, and then we have efficiency.
Mm.
Now, if we do get extremely efficient technology, solar power and wind power, the two most known, and hydropower, those are several times more efficient in producing energy and clean in the way that they produce it than the burning the coal power and the nuclear power and all these dirty power sources.
Yeah.
Okay, but then what can you do at home?
Yeah.
We can do 100 things or, you know, 25 things at home that in our neighborhood that don't require a government, a factory, or an industry to do them.
Mm.
And they're kind of afraid of that.
Mm.
This is a green revolution at home. But the problem with the green revolution is that the term green revolution was invented in the 1950s with the chemical farming.
Mm.
And the farming is a big problem because they use chemical fertilizers and pesticides, herbicides, and drugs to inject the cows and the chickens and the pigs. So it's learning, the big thing is learning how we're dependent on these importing and industrial cycles and what to do at home in our neighborhood. Well, bicycling is probably the most down-home, simple, energy-saving, health-giving solution in the world.
Yeah.
And aerobics, you know, jogging and running around. I mean, in a way, it's second childhood.
Mm, yeah.
Well, no, I'm going to sit in my chair and I'm going to consume whatever I want. I worked hard. I can do this.
Yeah,
well, yeah, but does it make you happy? Does it make you healthy? Are you getting to know your neighbors, or is it cut you off? You know, people are getting more and more cut off with their computers. I mean, it's a great paradox.
It is. Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, you know, how about, I hear a lot of propositions about, you know, cutting away on the meat altogether because there's, as it were, there's a lot of cows, you know, in our world because of the meat industry and a lot of, you know, they release, of course, you know, methane, you know, in their waste, as it were. Go vegetarian. Is that a recommendation?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because it's one of the hugest causes of man-made greenhouse gases. And again, we're not farting the cows. The cows are doing that.
Yeah.
And the cow poop releases CO2 and methane, and it's extremely I'm sure in Europe, that we have 50 million pigs and 100 million cows. I don't know how many that is. Oh, and the chickens.
Mm.
We have millions of chickens, too.
Yeah.
And so that's true. The eating of the meat is a tremendous suck on the ecology and the industry.
Mm.
The industry, the cows, when the cows are making so much gas, I mean, here we got all these trains, planes, cars, and trucks farting all these gases,
yeah.
And the cows are doing it.
Yeah, sure.
And then, you know, New Zealand is one of the most, it's the most ecological country in the Southern Hemisphere.
Mm.
And what they're just doing, this started last year, I believe, is that they just are this is impossible. They're actually taxing sheep growers because there's millions of sheep. England and in New Zealand have millions and millions of sheep.
Mm.
And, I mean, it's a huge industry. You know, the whole thing about wool and
sure.
Sheep, eating sheep, and sheep's milk and sheep cheese and all that. I mean, it's 'cause sheep are very productive, you know,
yeah.
as far as what we need.
Mm.
Well, they're making gas. The sheep are, so they're taxing the sheep in New Zealand for
yeah.
the gases.
Yeah.
It's absurd. Well, the taxing itself doesn't stop the sheep's farting. So what is yeah. what's that about?
That's right. Well, I mean, this is all of this, of course, is a very you know, difficult question, as it were, because there is a lot of people, you know, working within these industries and so forth, and I guess, you know, if we were to drop this over, you know, over a day, as it were, a lot of people would be, you know, unemployed. A lot of you know, economic, you know, chaos would be a consequence because of this. How do you know, any ideas on how to go about, you know, in slowly phasing out this, or any suggestions there, you know?
Yeah, well, you're bringing up the issue of chaos, economic chaos. Well, the economic system, war economy, and factory industrial pollution and waste are a chaos themselves.
Mm.
So those are causing toxic chaos with stress and
sure.
greenhouse gases
yeah.
and waste of resources. So we're wasting resources tremendously fast here. Europe is more efficient than America. America actually is proud of waste. It's quite bizarre, and it's kind of psychotic. People could be proud of waste.
Mm.
And there's 1,000 ways to save energy yourself at home and in your community. The websites, if you look on, there's lots of ways just to save energy, to become aware of efficiency and how to save energy at home and in your neighborhood, and neighborhood recycling stations and neighborhood bicycles and neighborhood gardens and neighborhood compost piles and neighborhood mulch. Neighborhood care centers. We've just lost the ability to be efficient. Now, I understand that Germany is probably the most efficient country in Europe. Is that true?
No idea, actually. That's interesting that you say that, but I think so. I don't know. What does that imply? Do you think that do they have you know, a long culture with agriculture, or are they better on you know, making things more efficient, or why do you think that is?
Well, Germany and Japan are the two most efficient technology countries.
Mm-hmm.
And Bucky Fuller, you know, the he was a technocrat, but he was a genius in terms of studying all this. He was helping us learn about the Earth's metabolics, in other words, the energy that we use to make energy,
mm-hmm.
the energy that we use to make a product. So that should be, you know, on products you have ingredients listed. There should be if we're going to really do efficiency, which I believe in the grassroots approach, you know, the down home approach. We should list number of calories and megawatts and energy that it took to make a product.
Yeah,
and see, that's what real efficiency is. We're not just talking about, well, I want to save a little bit of energy, save some money. No, we're talking about real efficiency. We can increase our efficiency from double the efficiency to 10 times given the industry and the waste that are in that product, in that service. So we have just lost the whole edge of awareness of what efficiency is.
Yeah.
So what is efficiency with any given product? Well, the main waste is shipping things.
Yeah, that's
1,000
right.
miles. We have called a 1,000-mile salad here in the States. And even in England, they'll ship food back and forth and back and forth and then to the store. It's quite insane.
Yeah.
So there's something about the waste there. And we've even need to look at our economic system. Why is the economic system so glad to waste? Why? Because the oil industry makes profits every time they ship something.
That's right.
So the Texas-style oil economy is, and by the way, the big oil started in Texas almost 100 years ago.
Mm.
So they have been profiting for, well, decades, for a century now,
yeah,
on this oil thing. So the oil waste, then when you burn oil, what does it do? It smokes up the atmosphere,
yeah,
creates smog, fog, toxic fumes, and heats up the whole weather cycles. So we need to this is an enlightenment of people to examine cycles everywhere, from the trucks to the weather to the water, the oceans, the melting of the ice fields, and how that affects the weather in our region, even here in the northwest United States. We get the melted ice from the Bering Sea. You know what that is?
Yeah, it's right up at the conjunction between Alaska and Russia, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the Bering Sea?
And it's been melting really, really fast.
Yeah.
Well, most people don't know about it because most of the people in this network are in Europe and the eastern United States.
Mm.
The west coast of the states is affected by the Bering Sea melting faster and faster and faster.
Hmm. Very interesting, you know.
It's all interconnected. It's all this infinite web links, networks together,
yeah,
in nature, not just internet.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, as you say, it is a global, weather, system. Obviously, if you have, a big hurricane in one area, obviously this will, affect the whole planet and all the weather systems around it. Obviously, so you're right.
They finally admitted in the East Coast climate people that the hurricanes cool the ocean, and how they do that is by the currents that they create.
Mm-hmm.
They're sucking up cold water from the bottom of the ocean.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so it has a cooling effect.
Mm-hmm.
That's why in 04, 05, there was all these hurricanes, and next year where there weren't hardly any.
Mm, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
so
that's right.
It is cycles. Everything is the balancing cycles, and if you take climate science as a whole, you rarely hear the word balance. I mean, rarely hear the word balance.
Yeah.
They'll use equilibrium. But the point is here that nature is always and everywhere balancing. So if they don't even mention balancing, does that mean their climate models are wrong?
You know,
who do you believe?
Yeah. that's interesting that you say, balance, of course, because that is what it's all about. It's a simple, it should be a simple way of doing the math, as it were. If you extract energy or add energy into the system, let's say from the sun, things will, as you say, find a way to balance themselves out here on Earth, and increasing warmth, all of this will obviously, lead to more hurricanes that season or that summer or whatever. How about the, I've heard different things about, because you mentioned all the ice melting and so forth. Do you know if it's true, if there are other regions around the world where ice actually is rebuilding again, or, it's growing again?
There's a book called Not by Fire but by Ice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And the guy is—he's in the Northwest. He's in Seattle, and he's been a lone climate scientist for at least 10 years, probably 20 years.
Mm.
Most of these scientists have been doing this for decades, but anyway, he's one of the few scientists, and he's a lone scientist. He's not employed by NASA or any of these big agencies.
Mm.
Universities. He's been tracking how the ice is growing, and there are places in Siberia and Canada and Greenland that the ices are growing.
Hmm.
But the biggest trend is the melting on the ice thing.
Yeah.
And we have here in the States, each mountain range has its own glacier fields.
Hmm.
And the glaciers in the Rockies are melting very fast. The the Cascades are melting, but we had a really good snow load this last winter here in the Cascades, so we're going to be having pretty good water this coming summer here.
Mm.
We keep having a little bit of rain, and the river it's up, but now it's starting to go down again. So it's different in every bioregion. You really need to study your bioregion if you want to understand this. The melting of the Bering Sea was down the west coast in the Japanese or the Aleutian Current that affects our weather. So you need to see the currents around where you live that affect your weather and then also the technology and how that affects that too. Because when the volcanoes go out, they affect the weather.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, definitely. Those things spew out a lot of, I don't know if it's CO2 directly, but it's a lot of greenhouse gases anyway that actually, again, you know, contributes to the heating and so forth. So definitely.
Yeah. Those are all causes.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. You know, I'm thinking about... let's see here. I'm lost in my notes. I'm thinking about, the talk goes, as it were, that we're going to have the sea levels rising incredibly much, and we might it might even develop into because I know this in one of your easings, you mentioned it like the new Exodus or something like that. You know that actually a lot of people will have to. Move and relocate.
Mass migration.
Yeah, exactly, mass migration. Tell us about that a little bit. What's your take on the rising sea levels and so forth?
Assuming that the ice in and around the glaciers and the Greenland and around the poles is melting, and all the reports are that the melting is happening. Well, the other reports are the islands. In the South Sea Islands are actually being flooded by high tides, and they're losing their farmland because whenever the sea water goes into the land, the salt, which is bad for growing things, plants do not grow with salt water. It just
That's
doesn't
right.
work.
That's right.
Unless you're in the ocean, you're talking about seaweed, and that's been evolving there for millions of years. So whenever the in the South Sea, Pacific Seas, South Pacific Islands, the islands there are the very south ones are being flooded, and the North Shore of Alaska is being flooded. The villages up there, the Eskimos who have been living there for centuries, millennia, they're being flooded and eroded away. The land is literally being in the winter when the storms, you know, the storms get up in the winter, they suck the land out. And they're swamping. Villages have been moving inland, and some of them are having to move completely away because their villages are being... but also, when that salt water comes in, it kills the vegetation, or it can become marshlands, you know, like where you have just grasses. That's what the marshes are. Their lands are called brackish water, where there's salt water and fresh water. The fresh water comes from the land, and the salt water comes from the sea, and the tides go in, they go out, they go in, they go out, and the grasses have become adapted to brackish water. That's what those marshlands are. But when the salt water comes into the islands, it will kill their vegetation for food. So it's an impact, and it's growing rapidly in the last 10 years.
Do you know if when the water comes in like that, does it also, you know, take with it back when it retracts again the topsoil layers and stuff like that?
Yeah, and also takes the shore away. So there's a lot of shorelands that are disappearing.
Yeah.
But of course, people's memories they're too. See, this has to do with habits. People's habits is that their memories that they're losing. Their memory of their own past, so their memory shrinks, and so they can only think of a week or a month or at the most a year.
Yep.
But if you study big cycles, then you see that everything works in long cycles, very long cycles. In permaculture, we call it the 100-year maximum.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in permaculture, like say if you're doing permaculture traditionally, your neighborhood, your community. then farming communities, they know when the long cycles are happening. But if they become dependent on machines and chemicals, then they lose their awareness of the long weather cycles, fertility cycles, because they're depending on these imports. So we've got to buy more bags of fertilizer and pesticides and chemicals and sprays and all that stuff. So they, instead of learning about natural cycles, they learn about monthly bills and the supplies of the trucks bringing in all these things for farming. We did farming for 6,000 years, I guess it was 6,000, 7,000 years, without agribusiness, farming, and machinery, and chemicals. And now in the last 50 years, we've changed that. So that's a big change from 5,000 years of farming to the last 50 years of industrial farming.
Yeah, that's right. And it's monocultures everywhere. And I guess that, too, is destroying the, you know, the earth and even, you know, it drains the soil of its nutrients and minerals. Isn't that right?
Yeah, absolutely. When we do organic growing, we usually intercrop. In other words, we have one crop next to the other crop. And the intercropping or row cropping or whatever you want to call it, guilds, is that we plant plants together that are happy together and they grow better together. We don't plant one crop for acres and acres and acres.
Yeah.
We intercrop so that the plants are cooperating and nourishing each other.
Yeah.
The nitrogen-fixing plants and the acid and alkaline balance, all again, balancing.
Yeah.
That's one of the main principles of organic growing.
Yeah.
And your body, too. Your body energy balance. The health industry, this is where the primal instincts and organic health comes in, is that the health industry, and I have a college degree in PE in health, is not based on balance and organic sources.
That's right, yeah.
Industrial science.
Exactly, and people pop pills now instead, and all that does, it's, you know, in the end, is make your body, you know, more alkaline, which makes, you know, contract diseases like cancer and, you know, all of these, you know.
No, when acids are what causes disease, not alkaline.
I got my English wrong here. Exactly, the acids, you need the pH balance to, you know, be healthy. That's what I mean. That's what I'm referring at here.
And alkalines, natural alkalines, can be healing. And
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
We become dependent upon medical healing and the chemicals, then we've forgotten what the causes of disease are.
Mm.
What is prevention?
That's right. So, you know, before we run out of time here, as it were, tell us about Instincto, because I know that you wanted to spend some time on this.
Yeah. Instincto is a health solution to these issues. And instincts are missing in the human culture in the cities. Because when I grew up, I had no instincts. I was born in a hospital under high stress, and I lost my instincts. Well, most humans who live in cities don't have instincts. The only medical recognition of instincts anywhere is a couple of nerve things. They'll tap on your knee or something to see if you have any nerve instincts, you know, and then in babies. So there's almost no, you know, say there's 10,000 tests that they do on humans to diagnose diseases. There's only a couple that have to do with your nerves that they'll tap on to see if your nerves are working there. Or babies. And I think it's called the Apgar score, which is they will test babies on 5 to 10 different reflexes on their body to see how their nerves are functioning. And that when a baby's born in a hospital, they will do these little tests on their body for instincts. Well, they don't really talk to the parents about it. They just do it. It's another scientific thing. They don't really explain. Science doesn't really explain. You have to go to medical school to get that.
Yeah.
So they do these tests on babies. Well, after that, they figure the humans don't have instincts, so they don't do testing on instincts. And I found 100 different instincts that humans have. And it's in your body, and it's taken me decades to get my instincts back, because I grew up in the city, I was hospital born, I was had no breast milk, and all these things from babies. So the whole natural birthing movement is a way to give or learn what the instincts are. And the instincts are a constant learning thing. So when we forget how to learn in school, that's what we go to school, we quit learning about nature, and we start learning about business. That's what school is about.
Mm.
They would call it history and grammar and math and science, but the truth is it's more just industry.
Yeah, that's right.
And what's called urban legends now. That's what our history really is, urban legends. And natural history is completely different, and it'll make you healthy if you apply it to your body.
Yeah. Hmm. So this instinctual, is this something, you know, in that way that goes hand in hand with you know, what you have been developing with the permaculture and a lifestyle in as a whole, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah, the rebirthing of the movement began in the 70s with permaculture, growing organic food, and building your own home. That's kind of the outside. The inside is a natural health, and that is massaging, dancing, yoga, walking, aerobics, bathing, sunshine, exercising, stretch, qigong, all these different deep breathing, meditation. They're all ways to relax, get your body soft, flexible, aware, strong, and even Tai Chi, Qigong. They're all ways of getting your body sensitive again, so that your instincts will work, and you'll feel what you need rather than look on a diet or plan something out. If you just have the food available, in the 70s in France, a movement called Instincto began, and of course in Europe the French are called a little bit crazy, and so they start crazy things. Well, Instincto is all raw foods, and so they were saying, well, you eat a whole raw food, you eat a whole apple, or you eat a whole something, and you eat it raw. Well, raw food is a huge movement, and I eat a lot of raw food here. We make kefir, which is like yogurt, raw goat milk. And there's a local goat farms around here, and those are called the green belt. In other words, around a town there will be farms, and Europe is a traditional. Well, where those farms are is near the town, so you can ship or trade or exchange. We even have bicycle carts going back and forth, and in China, they have millions of these little carts going back and forth between the farms and the cities. So this is kind of a revolution in the green economy.
Yeah.
To green up our economy with local products rather than handmade products and recycled, rather than shipping things a long way from a factory.
Yeah, yeah. How about, you know, let's say, like up here, countries like Sweden that have a long winter, a lot of these things, and we, of course, you know, import a lot of things. We import a lot of fruit, of course, bananas and stuff like this. Do you know if it's, you know, possible to grow, develop something to that we can grow stuff up here during the winter beyond, you know, I guess the regular greenhouses? And there are those, you know, around here too, obviously, but just to not rely on importing. Do you think that ever could be done or will be done?
Well, the European ecology is different than here.
Yeah.
And there is permaculture in around Europe, especially in Finland and let's see, Germany, Austria, some in France. Very much in Switzerland, and the permaculture grows food all year round and stores food, you know, the whole thing of the storage cellar and all that.
Yeah.
It's very traditional. So a lot of this means going back to traditions. Well, city people aren't going to be doing that unless they extremely learn. It's more like enlightenment about your body, about what is natural in your environment and what kind of natural needs do you have. Do you have needs for a store more than anything else? Well, it's just analyzing your own ecological footprint. In other words, how much energy it takes for you to live, to your transportation, and to analyze all these things. It's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Becoming aware of what makes you healthy and what makes you sick. High acid foods, cooked fats, cooked oils, the whole thing about eating animals.
Yeah.
Is a real issue with global warming, and most people, they don't think about how their products are made or grown.
That's right.
Or where, even where they're from.
Yeah.
Well, there's an awareness there, becoming aware of how a product is made, where it's made, how far it's shipped, and what do you do after it. It's a whole cycle. So this is like the science, holistic science, is whole cycles of everything,
yeah.
Not just the weather. That's why I call it Gaia cycles. Gaia is Mother Earth.
That's right. That's right. You know, I'm thinking as you mention these things here. You know, it sounds in a way that you know many people aren't going to make this transition. They aren't going to become aware. The question, I guess, is you know what will happen? You know, if the majority of the people continue the way they do, and if just a few of us, you know, try to change and better in some way, or do you think that things actually will change and we will make this? What's your take on it?
Well, I'm kind of schizo on this. I'm very positive about our permaculture here and growing our food and learning the natural cycles, and I'm rather discouraged about the way the whole city culture is going.
Mm.
And the war economy is terrible, and the war has been actually not considered a cause of global warming, and I think it's a major cause.
Yeah, definitely.
There is this huge split of the people who are becoming aware of natural cycles, Gaia cycles, and health needs and local living, and the mass culture, which is kind of in a suicidal trend of waste and pollution and depending on the big systems that are, I call them spoiled, spoiled culture.
Yeah.
And that's what I was. I grew up that first 25 years. I was totally spoiled. So I can't really predict what they're going to do. It seems like very bad news. And the migrations, you know, mass migrations.
Sure.
But then it takes oil to migrate.
Yeah.
So it's a very troubled situation right now, and the war is still going on. And what is it a war for? It's a war for oil. It's not a war for bringing democracy. Have you seen Robert Newman's The History of Oil?
I think I do. I can't bring it up in my memory now, but I recognize the title, definitely, yes.
It's on the web. It's a video.
Mm.
It's hilarious. It's a comedy. It's British comedy.
Mm.
But it's satire and critique and exposing the history of oil. It goes back 100 years.
I remember now. Yes, I've seen it. Yes, definitely. Yeah.
It's hilarious and very kind of dark and depressing.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. You know, again, I guess I can return to that question of awareness. What beyond, you know, okay, going on talks and so forth, and trying to spread the information as much as possible. What do you think can be done to help the raise the awareness, or will Mother Earth, as it were, find a way to make people, you know, look up from their day to day lives because of Gaia Rage, basically, more activity in the weather, more extreme weather. Do you think that will help to make people finally, you know, wake up to all of this?
Well, there's two major shocks in that realm as far as sort of forcing people to become aware and to simplify and naturalize and localize their home life. And that is the extreme weather cycles, the crashes, the cold, the hot, the freezing, the droughts, and pestilence. I mean, it sounds very biblical. And then the other is your self-awareness about nature and your love of nature. See, we need to go into nature to learn about nature and to learn about our bodies. If we've been living indoors too much and we're losing our instincts, then we go into nature to learn about what being simple is and being local is. So I used to take hot and cold showers every day. I took thousands of them, and I've had thousands of massages and thousands of hot baths and lived outdoors for 15 years. And I still bicycle around and take steam baths and hot and cold.
Yeah.
There's ways of getting your body really tuned up, but it's like body enlightenment. It's like becoming energy flow. And anciently, it was called Qi Kung. Qi Kung is the ancient science of body energy flow.
Mm.
So it's exercise, massage, acupuncture, herbs, and all that. So China is actually a great source of that, but they're industrializing really fast right now. So probably more Qi. Well, I don't know how much Qi Kung there is in China. They claim there's 300 million people doing Qi Kung, but I think that includes Tai Chi. All these things are, and yoga, are very good for your body to become healthy. and is how much do you want to be healthy?
Yeah.
Or do you want money? I mean, it depends on what do you want with your life and yourself and your values. What are your values?
That's right. I totally agree. And the only aspect to all of this is, of course, that this is now happening globally, and as more countries develop industrially and all of this, it seems like the planet is taking the route of the majority, and in the end, it feels like even if you try to improve yourself, there's nowhere to run. I don't mean to say that you shouldn't do anything at all. Not I'm not saying that.
Well, nowhere to run is kind of an escapist idea, and what I'm seeing is more of a positive thing. Are you living where you can be healthy?
Mm.
And if health is not a high priority, if your car and your job are more your bills are more important, then that's your choice.
Yeah.
And it's all about choosing what is the most critical needs that you have.
Yeah.
And your awareness expanding. So in a way, it's a self-sorting thing.
Yeah.
The more the economy crashes, the more people get sick, and the more depressed they get, or angry, or they become more natural. So
yeah.
The higher the price of oil is, the more people are going to save money. Well, are they going to realize what efficiency is?
Yeah.
See, it's efficiency is a huge concept of looking at technology, and then if we look at nature, what is the big concept there? It's balancing.
Yeah. I believe in that too, definitely, as you say, the balance of things, obviously. And, I think that this will be a great place to kind of round things off. And I think it has been, very informative, and it's very nice to have you on. And we'll definitely want to have you, back on at some time if you're willing to do that with us.
Oh, sure, I'd love to. Gaia Cycles is expanding. Finishing my book now, and it could be two books. It's so big. It keeps expanding.
Okay, well, how will that will be available later, through your website or through, like, Amazon.com or something like that? How does that work?
Through my website, I do have the Gaia Rage, which I send out to people for free.
Okay.
And then I have a 108-page book, which right now is $10 through the mail.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two sources right now, but I have my other organic health magazine called Primal Instincts, and that's $5 through the mail, or I also do trades too.
Mm-hmm.
So I do take cash. You can send cash to bills through the mail. And I was going to ask you maybe another time, like, you could talk to me about the weather in Sweden and the north coast of Sweden. Is the seas rising there?
Yeah, definitely. I have no idea if the seas are rising. The north of Sweden, because it connects, with Norway on the west side of Sweden, of course. But if you go to the east side, on the what is known as Östersjön, I don't think that is rising at the moment. I have to actually look in at that, but I don't think so. It's tremendously polluted, I know, but they're fishing it. All the fish is gone, basically, and they're putting in legislations to stop that and so forth. But no, I don't think it's rising. No.
Okay. Well, I just am curious about the entire Arctic and how the weather's working there.
Okay. Yeah.
Need to go and have some kefir that we've been making from goat milk here for my breakfast.
Okay, yeah, definitely. Give us out your website again, if you can, before we leave you, so people know where they can find your books and so forth.
Yeah, it's EFN.org, or if you just go Ecosma, ECOZMA, Ecosma.
Mm.
Synergy. So it's Ecosma/Synergy, and those are I'm the only Ecosma on the web.
Mm-hmm.
So if you Google that, you'll get it. Or if you want to know the exact address, you've got a link on your website.
That's right.
And also, it's www.efn.org/Ecosma/Ecosma. So EFN and Ecosma, if you just use those words, you'll get there, because it's the only Ecosma on the web.
All right,
and
definitely.
And the other site, I've got two sites there. Mm-hmm. One's called Ecosma, and the other's Synergy, Sunergy.
Okay, yeah, check that out. And again, these links will be on the information page on our website, so people can find those easily. And again, thank you so much, Michael, for coming on. This has been a pleasure, and looking forward to speaking with you sometime again.
Yes, let's do it.
Thank you so much.
Aloha.
Red Ice Creations Radio will be back again on Sunday with another program lined up for you. Remember that you can participate in this radio show. You can find all the details about this in our radio section on our website, redicecreations.com. We also have two different forums on our site that you should check out. And if you feel up for it, join in on the discussion. We have our own Red Ice Creations forum. We also have the MTSAR forum. Just type in redicecreations.com/MTSAR forum, MTSAR forum, if you want to access that. You'll find all the links to all of this on the left-hand side on our website. There you'll find links on how you can subscribe, how to search our news archive, access our shop, and much, much more. It's all up there for you to enjoy. All right, thanks for tuning in, and thanks to producer Fredrik Palmgren. We will talk more on Sunday again. Until then, all the best. This is Henrik Palmgren. Do take care.